Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate. Now listen to this. I'll tell you about the heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the loss of God. I'll tell you about the hopeless night, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
I'll tell you this. No eternal reward will forgive us now for not hiring Wally Backman.
What's that again?
Coming up. I love this song. Very mellow. Yes, everybody, we're going to be okay now. Everybody listen. Everybody. What the hell is this guy doing? I want to hear the good part of the song. Give me a little time, let me get it up my mind. Look at this. And they just fade away. And a chip. Freaking YouTube. Wow. Well, that really makes me mad. I don't know, man. You'd be 40. Oh, original. Let's see. Hey, open a show. You got to have something that's actually, you know, doing something here. Here we go. Let's just fast forward to the end. There we go. All right, hang on. I mean, come on. Let's start a show, damn it. Look at this. It hangs up. Oh, this is the night of the damned. Come on.
Red wine with a thing so fine, won't you keep me rocking all of the time? Red wine with a thing so grand, I feel $1 million when you're just in my arms. Red wine with a thing so sad, any time I see you always make me feel bad. Red wine with a thing so fine, won't you back in the fun? Red wine, tell me what is the thing, only for dinner and the big old thing. Red wine, tell me what is the thing.
I'm looking like the best in front of us. Red, red, white, I'm looking right from the start. Right from the start, from out of my heart. Red, red, white, in the distance. Red, red, white, in the modern day.
All right. What's that? Time to be cleared up my mind. Welcome to another exciting edition of All the Time as we kick it off here on until Wednesday night. Oh my God. Reach for the vodka. The holidays are coming. The lion broke and the monkey got choked. Hold on to you. Just to me. I have no idea if this phone's going to work the entire show, and I don't care. Talking to myself anyway. Number to call to be a participant in the show as we bop away with our eco-defiant reggae music here is 646-478-4847. That's the number. 646-478-4847. I'm Dr. Mark, your culture vulture. And if it ain't raining enough, it's a media shower tonight. Yes, the Leonid media shower. It peaks on the, what's today? Today's the, what's today? Today's the 17th. Peaks on the 18th. You can check it out tonight. If you look to the eastern sky, you see a lot of shooting stars out there, radiating out of the constellation. 2 or 3 hours before sunrise, when I'm up doing my book and stuff, when the moon has set. Some cool pictures of it on, if you go over to space.com. So you're up looking for shooting stars, making a wish upon a star. It's pretty wildless, you know. We have a fairly clear sky tonight here in the Larchmont area. So maybe if you get a lawn chair that reclines, you know, keep your neck from cranking around. So make sure we keep the chiropractic angle of the meteor observation kosher. So there you go. A couple hours before sunrise, about 5:15 a.m. Is a good time to check out your. You're shooting stars tomorrow morning. So there's a little thing to do if you're getting up early on Kiki Thursday started. Every 33 years, we get these media showers. And this is a pretty rare phenomenon taking place early tomorrow morning. So, you know, I'm always looking for the cosmic angle. It tells you to lie in a blanket or a reclining chair, get a full view of the sky. And if you can see all the stars a little deeper, you have a good shot of seeing these things. So there you go. Turning our attention to local activity, the Rangers are trailing the Bruins here 3-2 in the third period. Looks like about 9 minutes to go. They've been kicking it around all night. The Rangers have a four-game winning streak, so they've been playing fairly well there. Unbelievable comeback against the Penguins on Monday night that I caught after my first shortcuts to sanity class we did over in Port Chester. It was fairly well attended over there at El Chalon and Midland Avenue in Port Chester. We're back here December 6th. If you're interested in that, let me know. Email me at makeitsummer@gmail.com. Get you the details. $25 gets you a little snack and a little soma. And try and get that on the street. We'll be talking about a lot of things getting ready for the winter as we steamroll into the holiday season. Oh, my God. We've still got a couple more days to go, adapting to the clock change, which should be interesting, coming out of it on a full moon weekend. You know, we've done a lot of things the last couple weeks ass backwards. You know, we changed the clocks, run around a new moon, and now we're going to be adapting to the change clocks right around a full moon, and then once we're done with that, we're all going to basically point our cars to the family receptacle and try and spend a Thanksgiving during the eco week when everything's emotional. So, you know, not that our culture really respects or incorporates or even in a very pastel way. Actually, got a little message I got to send to somebody here. Yeah, because you know, even on a passing note, like today is Wednesday, right? Wednesday is miércoles in Spanish, which is Mercury. So Wednesday, you deal with a lot of things that are sort of lingering. That's why I do the show, I think, on Wednesday night. Tomorrow, being Jupiter, is more of a day of expansion, day of future-paced thinking, right? Things are going to be much more in a grandiose fashion. Well, Wednesday, they're sort of like in a mercurial fashion. They're kind of coming up, bubbling up from the past, like the plunger I have to use every morning. Friday, being Viernes for Venus, you deal with intimate issues. Saturday, the rules come out for Saturn. Sunday, Domingo, deal with spirituality. Monday, the moon, emotions. Tuesday, of course, conflict with Martes, with Mars, the warring planet. So, there you go. Stuck on Earth with you. And that's why it's like, I this time of the year, you really want to start thinking about how you're going to sum up the year. What's going to be your crescendo of 2010? And Charlie Rangel, you don't have to think about it anymore. Let's check in on old Charlie. I don't know what they've done with him today. I haven't really been looking at the news all day. Wow, Bill Nye, the science guy, collapsed. Guess he's okay. Let's see. Sarah Palin said she could beat Obama in 2012. Very nice. Nothing really in the news here. Lisa Murkowski got the Senate bid. We just got those votes counted today in Alaska. So the write-in candidate won in Alaska. How about that? Wow. And the news was true. The rumor was true between Eva Longoria and Tony Parker breaking up. They were denying it a couple of days ago. Now it's now it's a fact. Yeah. Let's check in on Charlie. Let me see if I can find Charlie Rangel. Walks out of ethics trial. That was tremendous. Let's see if there's any news. He's such a pisser. Let's see if there's any videos on him yet. I mean, this guy is just a classic. Classic. If you've been in New York for more than 5 minutes, you know about Charlie Rangel. He's just the consummate slick and slippery and slimy politician. You look at him and you go, oh, my God. He's like 80 years old. I don't know. All right, here's what Fox News, who always covers Charlie Rangel very fairly, and what they had to say. Well, guess not. I can hear it on Yahoo. Not on Yahoo. Let's go over here to YouTube. I'll tell you, the technology today has really been biting me in the ass, so more than usual? I don't know. I mean, if you listen to the show for more than 5 minutes, you know that every week I fight with my computer almost as much as I fight with other things. Let's see. Red, red wine. Boy, that's the best you can do on Charlie Rangel? Come on. He walked out. Hey, quick exit. Here we go. All right. Dun-dun-dun. Charlie Rangel. First, we got to get through this garbage. I don't know what this is. Somebody selling a phone. Some other garbage. Is it a power play? It looks like, no. Yeah. It's a 5-on-3? Oh, we have to go live to the garden. I'm sorry.
Charlie Rangel.
Hold on, Charlie. Wait.
Using house.
We got to go live to the garden. The Rangers are down by a goal. They have a 5-on-3 advantage, and they're going to screw it up.
Shut the pop!
He's bumbling Rangers. I watched Ranger games for I don't know how many years, and if you give them a 5-on-3 advantage, they will do a passing clinic that will blind an 8-year-old, and they won't shoot. So they have 45 seconds to go in this 2-minute advantage to tie the game, and they should be winning the game. If it's somebody posts tonight, this is one of those. It's very, very discouraging. Rangers are calling timeout here, huh? Gavrik scored. Dubinsky doobie doobie doo again. tell you, they're an interesting team this year. They sort of have an offense, but it doesn't always show up. I mean, they scored 8 goals on Sunday. Gutter went out 3-2 against Pittsburgh in overtime on Monday. Here they are in a 3-2 game here on Wednesday. We'll get to Charlie Rangel here in a minute, but there's a couple of examples of the media bias and the backlash that's out there this time of the year, which is just kind of all fits. All right, here we go. 5-on-3.
On the boards.
Come on, put it in! Is it in? Oh, my God! How did he make that save? I'm telling you, the goalie just did something that... How did he make that save? Wow!
I mean, this actually was a pretty good play. They get a give and go in the corner, and then he just fed the cutter. Oh, well, they're not going to show the replay now, but there we go. More, a little more.
Bumbling idiots. They're always going to get a pass block like this.
Like 20 seconds of passing the puck.
No shot off in the last 28 seconds, and then they cleared it. Unbelievable. Jesus. They had a four-minute power play before, and they didn't score. And now they got, look at this short-handed advantage here.
Almost tipped it in.
Full strength, folks. All right, I got to mute this. If they tie it, they tie it. They're just the Rangers. Come on. All right, let's get back to Charlie. As the Rangers continue to kick it around here, maybe the last minute or so we'll take a look at this. But you can't complain. You had a 5-on-3, you know, and you couldn't get a shot on goal. I mean, it's only been a great save on the one effort there, but I don't know. Hey, what they did the other night, up 1-0 and ended up, you got a little rush here? It's hard to look away, you know? Hockey's like that. Moth to the flame. And a kick in the ring. All right, here's Charlie. Let's take a look at what he did.
Stationary for fundraising. Rangel admits the facts but denies intent. Correspondent Molly Henneberg reports today's hearing got underway with money again taking center stage.
Embattled New York Democratic Congressman Charlie Rangel told the House Ethics Committee today he wasn't staying for his trial.
With all due respect, since I don't have counsel to advise me, I'm going to have to excuse myself from these proceedings.
With that, he left, telling the committee his former legal team dropped him this fall, doubtful that he'd be able to pay his future legal bills, and insisted he hasn't had time to raise money to get a new lawyer. He asked the committee to delay his trial.
No one is asking for the opportunity to have counsel.
But the Democratic chairwoman of the Ethics Committee wasn't buying Rangel's not enough time argument.
Mr. Rangel's counsel withdrew a little over a month ago, and further counsel has not been retained.
She said the trial would continue.
We recognize that Mr. Rangel has indicated that he does not intend to participate, and it is his right not to participate.
The 13 ethics charges against Rangel include failure to report income on a vacation home in the Dominican Republic and illegally using his Harlem apartment as a campaign office. Rangel has long maintained his innocence, but today the 4 Democrats and 4 Republicans on the panel announced they were in agreement on the facts presented in the case and were going into a closed session to determine if Rangel is guilty on any of the counts. Rangel was not pleased.
Yes, I saw it on television.
Have you been following it?
And what do you think about that?
I don't have any thoughts.
Is that fair without you having a lawyer, sir?
No, sir.
If he's found guilty on any of the counts, the full ethics committee would need to recommend a punishment. Meanwhile, there's also a report today from the New York Post, owned by the parent company of Fox News Channel, that Rangel also may be in violation of House rules for using money from his political action committee to pay some of his legal fees. A source close to Rangel tells Fox it isn't true. Brett?
Molly, thank you.
There's another fair and balanced report from Fox News. So there's Charlie. You know, and again, this is one of several things that have gone on in the last couple of weeks, as far as the backlash goes, because we're dealing with
that crescendo I was telling you about for 2010. And it was 2010 or any other year, kind of the wave hits the beach, especially right before the holidays, before everyone stops paying attention, you people get thrown under the bus. And it's been kind of a list. You know, my man Wally Backman, been absolutely just thrown under a team of Greyhound buses by the media as he waits for his second interview tomorrow with the Met Brass. See if he can get this job. He's been called everything in the book, and he still comes at you. Where Eco here does Charlie does the little, you know, serpentine to the elevator. Ananto, when he's confronted with this much backlash, usually goes into silent mode, which is exactly what Wally's done, because he's waiting for the how do you like me now moment. Now, if he gets the job, I really feel sorry for some of these reporters. They're going to be suffering the wrath of the Anto like you have no idea. Sarah Palin, a lot of backlash against her. Now, she's a junkyard file. Now, what does she do? She comes out on the offensive, like, you know, saying she's going to beat Obama in 2012, doing that, you know, Clover Lang, Mr. T act. And she likes to shake her fist and wave, you know, to get all crazy. I mean, it's basic. I don't know if her daughters are kicked off Dancing with the Stars or not. Somebody probably told me that. But that's how a philo deals with backlash. They get almost to the point where they get like a rattle. You know, there's like a rattlesnake. They just keep going and going. So it's all over at the Garden. Rangers take another chin. 3-2 loss. Lundqvist disgusted. 85th anniversary. They have all the alumni there. They can't win at home. This team cannot win a game at home consistently. Another close 3-2, you know, 2-1. That's the way they lose at home all the time. So there you go. There's your four-game winning streak. They go on the road now. They go to play the Avalanche, and I think they play the Timberwolves on Friday and Saturday. So we'll see. Come out of the week on the road. If they win more on the road, then, I mean, it's just amazing how they just cannot score at home. I've never seen a team. They had an outbreak against Edmonton on Sunday afternoon, but I tell you, I mean, their record at home. Let me double check while I'm sitting here, because it's god awful. Early in the season, but you know, this has been a trend. You know, so let's see. And again, the other one, Obama, who's suffered a lot of backlash, and we're going to get into that a little bit. Obama, the hour, our guest. Even that, like LeBron James, another one. What should I do? What should I do? What should I do to do? You know, philos tend to take the aggressive stance. Look at him and look at Palin compared to, you know, how Derek Jeter, who's been getting raked over the coals, you know, in his negotiation with the Yankees, don't see a peep out of the guy. Because they're busy writing a list. The Anto's are busy writing a list. Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. And when it's time for the worm to turn and he gets the hammer back, how do you like me now, will be said. Well, the list will just go on. I'd like to announce the following people who were not in my corner. You know, rather than thank the people and help them, they will punish the people that tried to, undermine them. And, you know, Obama being an exo takes this sort of theoretical or this, more intellectual stance on it and tries to rationalize. And it sounds like he's talking to himself, you know, and that's why all these things that have come up, whether it's healthcare, whether it's jobs, whether it's the war, whether it's immigration, all these culture war things, he always looks like he's apologizing or complaining. He's not really connecting anymore, and that's an exo when they're getting backlash, and we're seeing it play out. Now, the Rangers' home record, I guess now, is 4-6. They're a 10-8 team, 6-2 on the road. Unbelievable. 4-6-1 at home. The Bostonians, pretty much the same record as the Rangers, 6-1 on the road and 3-4 at home. 3-4-1 at home. Wow. Same problem. But, you know, tough loss. Tough loss. I mean, what are you going to do with the Rangers? I mean, really, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You know? What are you going to do about it?
You filthy criminals.
Okay. can do. So I wanted to get into that tonight because I think that, you know, as we go forward in this lame duck section of session of Congress that's going to be starting up, a lot of the, a lot of the truth that's in that's buried in all the fiction that comes out around these figures I'm just mentioning, politically, definitely, but as we look at healthcare, wow, get a spoon to try to find the nuggets of truth that are going to be buried in that rhetoric. Because when you have, like, a lame duck session of Congress, it's like a month and a half of backlash. Nancy Pelosi, you know, she got the hammer back today. You know, all these, it's like if you go right back into that sort of that almost persona non grata. Everybody basically is looking to save face. And when you're looking to save face, you will lose ass. That is basically that's the formula, guys. And, you know, and that's why the healthcare issues, because the tentacles are so deep. It's so interwoven with Big Pharma, interwoven with the policies that come out of the Center for Disease Cheerleading, CDC. Hello, my friends. And the WHO, the World Health Organization, WHO, sponsors of Baxter Labs, the makers of the H1N1 vaccine. That was a complete fraud. All of those things just get swept under the rug for policy's sake. And that's why, you know, I lose a lot of faith really quickly in a system that's that corrupt. And I just see healthcare as being as corrupt or more corrupt than almost any aspect of politics that's out there. You know, I'm just going through some of the videos this week I've seen and things I've learned. It's kind of scary. Let's see. Here's one about the vaccines and dental fillings causing Alzheimer's. Let's just take a look at that. We got a minute. It's going to play. More Fox News.
There's some interesting new findings that could have a big impact on treating Alzheimer's. The research, set to be published in next week's issue of the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, says mercury is likely to be one of the multiple causes of Alzheimer's. Dr. Sanara Kumar from our medical aid team is here. Dr. Kumar, great to see you. And this is an appropriate story for you because pregnant women are always told to avoid eating too much fish because of all the mercury in it. Now they believe that Alzheimer's may be linked to the mercury we consume?
Right. This study looked at all the different studies that have come out about mercury and related to other to any type of disease. And one of the most striking things that they found was that it really was found to be related or correlated to Alzheimer's disease. And, you know, we get mercury in so many parts of our environment, not just our foods like fish, especially if you live in New York along the Hudson River, but also in the in our dental fillings, as well as the vaccinations, even from the air. When coal is burning, we can get mercury from that too. What we don't really know is how much is too much for each of us to be able to metabolize, and are there different doses that each of us are going to metabolize? So this study, although we're far off from being able to use this information and being able to treat Alzheimer's, we're certainly providing more information as to why, as to one potential cause for Alzheimer's. And mercury, of course, once again, is being implicated in a neurological problem.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating thought.
Now, that is a... like the tip of the iceberg as far as all these other things being connected. And hopefully we'll get into this a little bit of a guess. There's a lot of stuff that's happening within healthcare, quote unquote, that affects decisions people make about their lives that aren't necessarily part of the system. You know, Alzheimer's, care for the elderly, care for special needs children, all the other things that affect the people that are supporting the people that are suffering from these different conditions. There's no script for this. And as more people succumb to the allopathic model and lean on the providers and the drug companies for answers to things that are really on them. You know, a lot of this has to do with the fact that there's not a lot of personal responsibility for staying healthy. There's no stigma in this society for lifestyle-based diseases. You know, whether it's obesity, whether it's smoking, whether it's alcoholism, whether it's the drug addiction, there's been a sort of a, you know, oh, it's a disease, as if that's your get-out-of-jail-free card. You don't have to ever, you know, overcome it or be able to manage your life you just become part of a category, and then you're treated as someone who's a victim, you know, or you're afflicted by something. That's really what it comes down to. And unfortunately for us, it just means more people being basically lost down the black hole, and the system exploits you. Now, whether you're dealing, I was just talking about this with a client before, how, I call them patients, it's a stupid name, is that once you take an acute condition and then you try to intervene with it and flatten it out and make it a chronic condition, then what happens is the system says, well, I'm trying to get your attention in the moment, but if you're going to just only take a piece of the message over time, you end up with worse and much more complex factors to deal with because you didn't address what was really happening. So we'll get into that a little bit. And we have our guest is here now, so let's put her up on the program. And joining us from an undisclosed location north of, I'll just say north of Connecticut, is Leah Calabrese-Eck from our friends at the Eliza Corporation, and we'll give her the woo-woo.
You know what I'm saying? Then you got the flows. They didn't trip off the flow masters.
That decoration, man.
Just a decoration. All right, so welcome to summertime, Leah. Are you there?
I sure am. What a welcome. Gets rowdy after 9 p.m., doesn't it?
Oh, you didn't hear my Ranger rant a minute ago because your Bruins just beat my Rangers, so I was... I was very upset.
So I came in just at the right time, in other words.
Yeah, I got over it. I was busy. I went through that to Charlie Rangel to Alzheimer's and mercury and teeth and all kinds of things. So thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for inviting me.
It's a strange circumstance that we meet here because we're now a couple weeks past the election.
Mm-hmm.
And people are starting to focus, you know, back on their lives again. They could stop with the purple and the red and the blue and all the other stuff, and they go back to just, you know, trying to stay on the right side of the road as they get ready for the holidays. And in your world, because it never stops spinning, you know, in a database society, what's the one thing you think that came out of this election that people learned about, you know, Obamacare or the new health reform that maybe they didn't know? Going into the election and as a result of having to pay attention to this stuff for 5 minutes, now they're enlightened more than they may have been before.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair question. I try myself in all spheres of my life to be a little nonpartisan. I think everybody takes something out of this, whether it's, you know, maybe we were too aggressive on one side, we didn't think through all the implications of some of the pieces of reform on the other side. I think what we've heard a lot of is, like, wow, we've crammed a lot of stuff was crammed into that bill, however many thousands of pages it was. And there's some kernels of stuff in there that I think still have real potential. And I've heard that in commentary from both sides of the aisle, so to speak, in the, you know, in the weeks in between these midterm elections. I think that I'm hearing people still feeling positive, and of course that's in my world, but I like that world, so I'm going to stay in the world of positivity for now and just focus on some of the things that we think, you know, what are the good things that we can come of this? For the greater good, not to be corny, but one of the things that I think we've seen come out of health reform that excites us, you know, certainly given the kind of work that we do at Eliza, which is reaching out to folks and engaging them in conversation, whether it be with a computer using, you know, automated voice system or, you know, an email outreach or text or whatever you want on behalf of a healthcare provider, what we found is that, you know, policy is interesting and it gives us loads to debate about. but, you know, what we like that's come out of reform is this idea of it's going to be more of a consumer world for many of us. You know, when you look past all of the nuts and bolts of policy and regulation and things like that, one of the things that we're pleased to see is that, you know, whether or not you like the idea of everybody having to have some kind of insurance, what it is going to do is probably shake up the consumer marketplace when it comes to choosing a health insurer. And that is something that we think the time has come. Because as we know from talking to people, you know, we often take a look at the kinds of things that we as healthcare, you know, providers, so to speak, need to tell people, patients. You know, we're those patients too. We sit on the other side of the table all the time, right? And what we've always, you know, the message that we've been trying to drum out for 10 years or so is like, you know, engagement, right? It's engagement is the key to healthier behavior change, right? I mean, I caught the tail end of what you were talking about right before I joined. You were talking about, it sounds like you were contrasting an acute condition versus a chronic condition. And I think no matter which of those areas you fall into, whether you're engaging somebody with an immediate type of message or more of a cheerleading role, right, that you've got to stick with somebody over time who has a chronic condition and make them care as much, you know, 15 years into it as they did the first year of it, all of those kinds of things we think are going to matter more. We think it's going to matter more how healthcare companies talk to and entice people who are now going to have to shell out some dollars for their services. And, you know, taking a look at what's the consumer marketing world? Like, how can we use them as a model for what works, right? I mean, they, you know, Hardee's has this down. Coca-Cola has this down. Philip Morris has this down, right? They're enticing people to their products with language and sexy imagery and contests and sweepstakes and entertainment and games and all that stuff. And I think a lot of us who are dealing in this world of, you know, the health 2.0 world or the patient engagement world or whatever you want to call it, are big believers in taking a page from that consumer marketing stuff, the good parts of it, and saying how can we be that kind of enticing thing to people who are now looking around and realizing they're going to have to part with real money now, you know, to get the healthcare services that they need. So we are happy to, you know, for this to become less of a, you know, take off the horns a little bit and think mm-hmm. about more, like, what do people really want and how can we make sure that we're giving it to them and be more of a consumer-driven market, which, you know, you could debate whether or not healthcare has been that for the past several years.
Yeah, well, I guess, like, I'll kind of pick apart your argument in a couple of different directions here. For the most part, like I was discussing with the guest Bert before he came on the air, I had a client today that you know, dealing with gout, okay? You know that mm-hmm. commercial, the guy walks around with the uric acid bottle, you know, he's everywhere?
Sure.
And it's
sure.
like, you know, I was talking about how you take a condition that's a chronic condition like gout, and then you have an acute attack, and
mm-hmm.
then the intervention is just to get out of pain, which
yeah.
by suppressing the pain, you actually create more problems with your chronic condition, which is underlying it, and end up with more serious complications later, kidney stones, whatever. And I was explaining how if you understand the message, then you don't misinterpret the symptom and then try to react to it. And you can't do that if you're not educated in a non-allopathic way. Most people that are getting pushed into this health 2.0 model, it really is more of the same. It's more of the same health 1.0 in terms of treatment, condition, you know, symptom, you know, kind of cycles. And though people don't understand how to work with their system in a much more troubleshooting way, where you're not constantly labeling your problem,
mm-hmm.
you're understanding why the system would express that
mm-hmm.
now, what can I do to support myself, rather than lean on interventions and
yeah.
Drug companies for more
yeah.
answers
yeah.
when all they do is just give you
right.
more side effects.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree, and I think that's the beauty of some of the tools. I mean, I don't know if you and I have the same definition of Health 2.0, but when I use that term, you know, I'm thinking about the kinds of tools that come out that are, you know, let's take, you know, social networking tools for patients, right? You know, like the patients like me model, something like that, not necessarily that specific.
Yeah.
Organization, but something
well,
like that, right?
The other side of
like,
it, which is the WebMD model, which
yeah.
is hypochondriacs.com.
Do it yourself, right, exactly, self-medicate.
Well, they just, yeah.
Or scare yourself so you don't get another wink.
Well, that's what people do.
Right.
I swear to God,
yeah.
if you're over 65 and you get the you get on the web and you can have anything from a hangnail
yeah.
to a splinter, you go on web on WebMD and you think you have a tumor.
Exactly.
In 5 minutes.
But you know, I mean, to continue your... you know, your story around the gout is that if you know you've got mm-hmm. a condition and you can be pointed to, told about, whether it's through your physician or whether it's, you know, through, you know, whatever medium it might be, hey, there is a community out there for folks maybe somewhat like you, maybe a lot like you, maybe nothing like you, but you may all share a thing, you may all share one thing, which is that you're dealing with gout. And so I think, you know, those tools, people get sucked into them as people tend to get sucked to any kind of social networking thing for a certain type of person. That's a very attractive thing. And I think what it does is, to your point, it makes these kinds of communities. I'm not going to say that everything in them is, you know, 100% correct and certified and AMA approved and all that kind of stuff. But what it does do is it gives people a lot of perspective. It gets them extremely engaged in their care so that they, you know, and it shows them a lot of different perspectives that they can, again, hopefully use to bridge that online experience into the world of, okay, now how am I going to, how is this going to impact my behavior? How is this going to impact the way that I approach a conversation about this with my doctor next time I see them? You know, how can we bridge those two spheres? And I think it offers a lot of good in terms of, you know, it's not just pharma speaking at you. It's not just your physician speaking at you. It's people like you talking about experiences like you have or like you may have or like, you know, maybe you don't want to have.
Yeah, I understand the peer-to-peer aspect of it. My issue with it is that there's another road. It's almost like 95 North and 95 South going past my office here. Is that there's the patient-driven, consumer-driven sort of peer-to-peer network that's going on, which I think is fine, and it can at least get you answers that are not going to be, you know, under the rubric of treatment. It's going to be, how do I manage this? How do I deal with logistics? How do I deal with it? My mother's in Florida. I'm over here. How do I deal with, you know, all the coordination that goes on just to get people to appointments sometimes takes, I need a babysitter, and I need this, and it, you know, all those things, and you have somewhat of a social network for that. The other side of it is the side that's coming from the government out, from the central part of the system out, which is labeling, databasing, indexing, and rolling out policy that is more digital so that, you know, hospitals can talk to each other and the pharmacies can talk to each other and things like that.
Yeah.
So there's much more of a tracking device, so to speak.
Yeah.
And they now have
these
bottles that have the little computers in them where they can actually tell you, every time you open the bottle, it sends a message up to say, you know, you're taking your medication, you know, according to what the prescription is. To somewhat curtail the off-labeling and all the other things that go on when people are mixing their drugs and sharing them. I used to see people sharing their meds and, oh, you want a Klonopin? You want it? Everyone was a closet pharmacist. So I did see, like I said, to me, because of the fact that we're building Health 2.0 on top of the Health 1.0, which is a complete and total failure in every dimension.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really created any health. It's only created a lot of rich, big pharma companies and some stocks and things. It's the allopathic system, as I say every week on the show, it's the third leading cause of death in the country is Western medicine. If we're going to build a digital version of that on top of it, to me, we're just going to accelerate the victimization part of it, which is, you know, here's me and here's my affliction, and, you know, I'm going to be the next guest on Dr. Oz and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then the other side of that is that we're going to continue to alienate ourselves from being able to think in a systemic way so that we can stop villainizing the disease. And whether it's, you know, swine flu or whether it's, you know, we're coming up, you know, the holidays, we're going to be dealing with a lot with people dealing with depression and people dealing with, you know, the seasonal affective disorder already. And it's just, to me, we villainize the disease, we victimize the individual. And the hero always seems to be treatment, drug, you know, intervention, which is very costly. So we don't educate anybody. And then, like, no matter what happens, we're looking. Then we turn from a health rubric to a legal one, and then we want to go to court and get the pinata out and say, you know, well, this and this happened to me, and I should be given, you know, some type of reward for going through the system and not getting what I needed. And then you have people that literally spend, you know, chunks of their lives going to hearings and court and following through these long. I mean, I remember back in the 90s, it was the breast implant brigade. Everybody went through, especially right here in New York, it was like every other week. It seemed like I had another case coming in of someone that had Sojourn syndrome or whatever it was as a result of the silicone implants. And oh, this caused my problem. And again, what happens as a result is nobody takes any personal responsibility. No one learns how to run their own individual lives in the face of that condition. And so, to me, we're building Health 2.0 to communicate, but we're communicating about the same things, about symptoms, treatment, interventions, and policy. And as long as that's the four corners of the table, you guys in the database world will have a lot of information to correlate, a lot of feedback, focus groups and things like that. But there won't be a lot of forward movement. It's just going to go basically around the board like a Monopoly game. And every time you land on the wrong square, your family gets impacted by it. That's one of the things that ties into some of the stuff we've seen with financial stress, because the people that are going bankrupt and losing their homes, a lot of them have, they're what they call the sandwich families. They got the senior care for their parents and grandparents, and then they got kids, that are teenage kids that are very expensive going into college. And the middle-aged parents are basically in the sandwich there, and that causes them a lot of stress. So how do you guys overcome that tremendous amount of turbulence?
Yeah, well, I don't know that we necessarily have the answer to that, but I do think, I'll pick up on a couple threads. I think your last point is so important, which is, this idea of what are all of these other pressures. You think about, okay, what are the problems with healthcare? Oh, it costs too much, there's too much litigation, we haven't come up with these answers yet, we're totally discombobulated. All of those things, of course, those are issues, those are big problems that somebody way smarter than me needs to take a look at. What I love that you mentioned is that there are these other things that aren't policy related, right? These are, maybe they are if you, forward chain enough, but there are things like, I would love to be able to live I would love to be the picture of health. That's my goal. But I can't do that because I don't have the time to take off because I need every cent I can possibly get. I don't have any time to take off for a medical appointment or a string of therapy sessions or anything like that, because not only do I not have the money, but I'm also, like you said, I'm caring for my mother with Alzheimer's 90 hours a week. How can you, meaning whomever, the big you, tell me that I am not, that I'm underperforming or that I am missing the mark or that I'm going to owe you big time at some point when I don't even have the resources available to do that? So I think it's something that we at Eliza like to shine a light on, that because we can't fix those bigger issues necessarily. But what we can try and address is those kinds of things that we hear every day when we call into people's homes and hear these kinds of, either directly or indirectly, we hear these kinds of sentiments. And, what can we do about that? Well, all we can do is say, hey, Eliza's been quantifying things like what are those big life issues that people are saying are getting in the way of their ability to live their healthiest, best, happiest, hurrah, hurrah lives that they do not feel like they're getting any support from their healthcare providers or the healthcare industry, however you want to define that. And not surprisingly, it's a huge gap, right? Things like, caregiving ranks huge. Caring for an aging parent ranks huge on the list of important factors in my life that are keeping me from being my best. You say to somebody, okay, that's really important to you. Do you feel like you're getting, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much support are you feeling that you're getting on that from, your health provider who's supposed to be responsible for keeping you healthy? 1, 2, 0. huge gap. Mm-hmm. So that's where we can kind of say, all right, we've been able to quantify this with some data, but then the other half of that is like, okay, now we can only approach this given the tools that we, Eliza, have, which is communications and community. And I know that, that makes me sound like I'm sitting here singing kumbaya sometimes, because you're addressing, you bring up a lot of really hard issues. But I think that opening conversations to some of these uncomfortable, scary issues, like how are we going to address caregiving, because it ain't going away, it's only getting bigger. Things like debt, we all know where that's headed. things like the economy, things like I'm working 90 hours a week to make ends meet, all those things. What can we do other than shed light on them and say, hey, we're an industry, we're really smart, we all care about things, we care about people's well-being. How are we ever going to even open the door to address some of these issues?
Yeah, and again, like I said, I don't think we can solve that at the business end of a mouse, because eventually we have to have that kitchen table wisdom kick in.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with a lot of cultural differences, a lot of generational differences, and a lot of philosophical differences, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, just take something as simple as the vaccine issues that have come up. You know, the last couple of months, I mean, we talked about the HPV vaccine that's been, you know, just completely just driven down, you know, the parents' throats over here in New Jersey and some other areas. And actually starting to stick the vaccine in the boys, which makes no sense. But, you know, there's so many ethical aspects, not just political, but ethical aspects of the sort of, I call it nanny state, kind of a doling out care, where people have this perception that, okay, now I have access. You know, 34 million people got access as a result of the Obama bill. But they're getting access to a system that has absolutely no regulation on its own policies. So Tamiflu comes out for the H1N1 last year. It's completely bogus, okay? Mm-hmm. They were giving out empty vials of H1N1 vaccine in Atlanta. Nobody, no heads rolled for this. They just went right back this year and said, oh, we're going to combine the two flu vaccines. They're giving out flu vaccines at every corner around here a month and a half after the big health organization said, you know what, it's not contagious anymore. We're already immune to it. And most of the people that are immune to it are over the age of 59. Who are they trucking over to the drugstores? Seniors. So there's no rhyme or reason to this, because it's not really a care model. It's a scare model, and it's built to exploit people that are vulnerable, that are scared of disease. And because, like I said before, there's an economic consideration, quality of life situations, all these things that you guys are documenting and databasing, that nobody's correcting.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're getting good at describing a problem without actually doing anything to solve it. And that's one of my sort of disillusionments when we had our conference in October, getting together a lot of experts that I thought had a handle on this. And what I found out was is that the further away you get from the mainstream model, the more you get into a lot of provincial and a lot of tangential areas that don't necessarily communicate well. And so research communities don't communicate so well within themselves, different factions of research. They don't communicate with the clinicians in the field, and they don't communicate with the academics that are in the schools teaching the future doctors of America, you know, how to work. And so what happens is that the messages come out, and you see it all the time, you know, fluoride this, or there was one today that was talking about, you know, let me just see if I can pull it up quick, because it was kind of a funny one. That almost every day there's another sort of insight. Yeah, I will find it. Let's see here. That is trying to describe a phenomenon that's still evolving, that has nothing to do with health and disease. If you get out of the health and disease conversation, which is just a labeling contest, health is a beauty contest and disease is an ugly contest, you have vitality in the middle of that. And vitality is something that everybody wants, but no one knows where to get, and they can't get it from a drug company, and they can't get it from a physician. They have to get it from their behavior, which has to be supported outside that circle, which is where I think Health 2.0 can really shine.
Exactly.
That's
the community aspect. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, and then you see people going, you know, like communities trying to lose weight as a group, or communities trying to, like, walking programs. I love all that. I just don't see that being very viral. I see that being very sort of sporadic, and what's more common is everyone gets a flu shot, you know, everyone's taking their, you know, their antidepressants. 10% of the country's on antidepressants. I mean, that's a lot of people.
Sure. So you're talking about the difference between inspiring ongoing behavior change, like, you know, the walking group that meets not just every day in November, but also in December and January and February and March and April, et cetera, as opposed to, I'll take the laxative.
Well, I'm talking about the walking group that's sponsoring the anti-cancer program. You know, they walk for every disease in this country. They walk for every disease. They don't walk for anything that has to do with vitality and longevity. So it just seems like we're wrong-headed in all of our good-naturedness, you know, and our benevolence here to do things as a community. But the community is always up against this
sort of continual opposition from both the government and the policymakers that are lobbying them, insurance companies, drug companies, you know, and technology, really, that's exploiting their ignorance. So it's like, unless you, like to me, if you spent, it took that whole thing, that 20,000-page bill, Obamacare bill, whatever you want to call it, and you took everyone that was out there that was doing anything in the health field, whether it was allied health professionals, whether it was primary health care practitioners, whether it was nurses, and you said, you know, that the government, not the people, the government, which has all this money to throw out for everything, is going to basically employ you, because you're licensed by a state, usually most of us are licensed in one state or another, to do a certain amount of health education a month so that people would understand the conditions or the niche that you work in best, so that people got introduction to what it's like, getting it almost like the way they educate people about, you know, how to use tools at Home Depot, how to take care of your car at a Saturn dealership. It's like, why not? Why not understand the relationship between vision and posture, and understand how that's going to affect you ergonomically and how it's going to affect you behaviorally, instead of waiting for yourself to buckle and fall apart, then you got to go through the phone book and find 15 people to take care of every little bit of the condition. And you know, I always ask people, what did you do about that? What did you do? And they don't know. I'm so glad, I mean, in a way, that I'm sort of a fish that doesn't know he's wet, that I operate largely outside the system. My kids haven't been vaccinated. They don't go to the pediatrician except for blood work and school stuff. And for the most part, everything's dealt with, you know, basically within the home. So, you know, sort of like someone that's you know, decided I'm going to homeschool my kid, I'm going to home health my kid, because the system is very exploitative and into labeling. You guys in the database world can either be a bridge or a tunnel when it comes to getting people through this bureaucracy. So it's like, if someone's standing still looking at Health 2.0 as it exists right now, is it populated with a holistic worldview, or is it much more of the traditional worldview as a whole?
Well, I mean, I think that one of the main themes that I take from Health 2.0 is this idea of, you know, connectivity. So, you know, that's just my natural inclination to believe that, of course, we all have, you know, we're all working busily in our little corners of healthcare service and delivery, with the greater goal of making, I'm not even going to say that word, it begins with T and ends with errancy. But, I mean, I think that that's been our goal, is to say, like, we're building to make a network of tools, and using the word network really loosely, that will appeal to many different types of folks who need healthcare, need and want to use healthcare. Not everybody, to your point, is, you know, not everybody listens to their doctor's orders or cares about their doctor's orders. Some people, really, really important. So I think it's about finding, you know, realizing, you know, that there are certain approaches that work really well for some people. We're not trying to, I think the whole idea behind Health 2.0 is proliferation, so that we're not pigeonholing people into things, giving people a range of ways to access and address and communicate about their health in ways that feel right to them, whether that's, you know, the route that you've taken with, okay, I want to be home healthing, you know, my family, so, okay, I'm going to need tools, you know, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but, you know, if I were to take that route, there are certainly tools that I would want access to so that I could be the best home helper I could be. For others, that's, hey, point me to the, you know, the network of physicians in my area that all scored tops in their, you know, on their medical exams. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I think that's, it's that nobody's saying you have to use this or that or the other Health 2.0 tool. It's this idea of, you know, in some ways democratizing some of the things that are out there, so that, I mean, putting aside, you know, do you need an iPhone to access it? you know, these are the resources that are out there that are designed to be on the ground, many of them for free, geared towards consumers to make their way through the muckety muck of the system and find their own way. So I think, you know, I may be a Pollyanna, but I do think that.
That's an ideal. There's nothing wrong with that. But look at this recent thing in New York. I don't know if you followed this Four Loko drink that they're trying to take off the market here in New York, which basically is
They call it blackout in a can.
Yes.
His nickname. Yes. Are you familiar with this thing? Okay.
So I've only read about it.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah, it's, again, I'm maybe I'm old school, but I'm still recovering from hearing about teenagers take, cold and flu medicine as a speed, and also do the vodka and the Red Bull, which has now become passé. Now it's they drink three or four of these, and it basically, this thing is it's got, I think it was... the equivalent of three beers and three cups of coffee or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
And at some point, this thing got past the FDA's, filtering, and now there's a clamoring to take it away because energy drink, is its category, whether it has alcohol or caffeine or whatever. I am old enough to remember Jolt Cola and things like that.
Sure.
So, like I was saying before, is that until there's a stigma attached to lifestyle-induced, addictions, diseases, conditions, the culture just tolerates it, and then it tries to patch it later, rather than saying it'd be like California rejected the legalization of marijuana, right, a couple weeks ago. That was one of the big fallouts of the election out there.
Yeah.
It would make a lot of money if they legalized it. That's the argument, right? That was one of the proponents that argued, hey, this would make a lot of money. California's in a lot of debt. But again, you're now, like tobacco, like alcohol, you're now desensitizing the public and saying, hey, it doesn't matter, just go ahead. Thinking that the public would self-regulate and police itself, no. It just becomes more addicted, more prone to being abusive, more prone to being controlled by those substances, just like it does with sugar and corn, those are the benign, socially acceptable things, and caffeine. And ultimately, it weighs down the gross national health of the country. Not that we're ever going to be, pure and simple again, because, again, most of us are wired up on antidepressants. We've all been vaccinated. We've all taken antibiotics. We're all eating diets that don't fit our constitution. So that's why you've got to take health out of Health 2.0 and make it much more about responsibility and about longevity and about productivity and things that are practical. Because health isn't a practical pursuit anymore. Maybe I'm just, been out here too long. I don't think health is something that anyone can, do you know any healthy people? They're usually very, the ones that exude it are usually kind of like very, very rich people. They act as if everyone should be like them and just, run, walk, and they get almost, elitist about it. And you've seen those healthier-than-thou types, It's another form of narcissism at this point, because it's always about the beauty contest. Appetite suppressants, lose weight while you sleep. There's a million infomercials at night. I think they've exhausted the abdominal muscles in terms of devices, but maybe I think that things you can strap on, things you can rock back and forth. Just about everything, all in an effort to look younger, sexier, more attractive. Not necessarily healthier. So, from your standpoint, interacting with people, as they wander around this kind of mall looking for their frequent flyer miles where they go on their spa vacation after they've, done something to get a pellet out of the Health 2.0 system, are we teaching them fast temporary belief over fast temporary relief?
That will vary, of course, by the approach that you take, of course. But I think that we get into these areas of behavioral economics and things like that, where, it's like, does it take for something, what kind of behaviors and incentives, incentives meaning anything. I'm not talking about cash here necessarily. But what are the motivators that lead to sustainable change? Because you're right. I mean, we jump up and down if we can get somebody to, have a recommended screening. That's great. We did our job. We checked our box. But how do we affect change in some of those more difficult things, like I think you're getting at, which is, maintaining a healthy cholesterol level or, getting your, lowering your alcohol intake or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are a lot of things that are afoot in trying to figure out what those things are. And you're absolutely right. Some of them are very much based on the frequent flyer mile model, right? And
yeah.
You know, you can debate whether or not there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, if it...
Again, it's a game show. We're living in a game show. Tell me what I've won.
Exactly.
If there's no reward, I won't do it.
Right, exactly. And that is definitely how some people are. You know, it is very clear. There are people who are extrinsically motivated and there are people who are intrinsically motivated. And I think you have to acknowledge that. I mean, I know you do. There's not one path to enlightenment here. There are many. And for some, it is going to take that eternal sweet stakes. You keep taking that med, that's awesome. We're going to keep, feeding you rewards. That might just be what you need for somebody. I mean, maybe after a while it becomes, now it's habitual and you forget that you're even accruing things anymore. That's totally possible, and then that's great. You can make behavior change. But then there are other people that we know, either directly or indirectly, are more intrinsically motivated. And there are the things like, that idea of, of social norming, basically, right? Which is, I've made a pact with, my circle of four friends that each time that I'm going to, I'll lose 20 pounds. And, I'm accountable to you guys, right? And that idea of being accountable in your own social circle of being, if I don't do that, then it's going to take away something from my friends and family. Those kinds of things. Like those can be, they can contribute, I think, to small wins. That 20 pounds, mm-hmm. that extra dose of medication I remember to take. But I think I'm hopeful. I think you're probably sensing a trend here. I'm hopeful that, mm-hmm. that we can start making these into habits. I mean, you're talking about changing humanity's behavior. It's a really
I guess because we're so motivated by the signs on the door and the direction things go. Is that to me? If you just change a couple of words, you almost change the entire game.
Exactly.
If you take away what you were talking about there, if you take away the word normal, because I don't know how Health 2.0 defines normal, but normal has to do with a bunch of common findings that were done 100 years ago when it comes to blood pressure and body temperature and a zillion other things, that in the age of epigenetics and the age of individual variation means nothing. BMI is a perfect example of the abuse of normal. Because body types are different and genetic variations have huge ranges. So it's like, to me, if you take away normal and you get to the word functional, then you can get to dysfunctional, not disease, dysfunctional, because it just means that there's more energy spent to get the same effect. And that's why I advocated putting coherence into the conversation, but I took it right back out of Health 2.0 about 5 minutes after the conference because I realized, that conversation can't take place in Health 2.0 because they're still talking about health and disease and normal. And so they hear coherence and function and dysfunction. They're like, what the heck is that? It's Swahili to them. So it remains this researchy, sciencey sort of academic conversation that even the academics, because they've been indoctrinated in the other system, don't understand how to apply it. So unfortunately for me, out in the field, it leaves you really at almost, you shoot the interpreter.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we should all individually have your philosophy that I am either performing at or near my peak or I am not, whatever my personal peak may be, and always set my sights higher. Yeah, I think what we get distracted by are the fact that, for better or for worse, the industry has set benchmarks. So that we can be.
We're told. FDA tells us what's good for us, but then it lets Four Loko on the market until somebody's heart stops in Jersey. It's a system that only corrects mistakes. It's like the cops. Somebody's yelling at me across the street. I can't get the cops to stop them from yelling at me until they shoot me. Then the cops will come look for the guy. So it's like we seem to have a sort of wait for pathology to show up, and then we'll have intervention and conditions and support groups and meetings. But that whole whole notion of preventative health care, which was, you know, in its early stages was benign. I hate to use the words benign, but it had an innocent aspect to it of we're trying to take some of these conditions that we see arising in certain age groups and do some testing. But what happens as a result of that is you generalize the condition and make it inevitable. Then people go, whatever, it's going to happen to me anyway. I'm predisposed. And then the insurance companies go, well, we don't treat that condition. Well, then the Obamacare says, well, now you have to. It just keeps compounding itself. And like I said, from a Health 2.0, where we could have restarted and had and truly had a patient-centered or a, like I said, a kitchen table-oriented healthcare system, we're going to get a sort of a Bluetooth version of, you know, the old model. And we're just going to have more ways to diagnose and more ways to describe disease and less ways of understanding what keeps us functional, what keeps us productive, unless we get the heck out of the clinical world completely. And that's why I was hoping, you know, you guys, you went to the summit meeting, you guys have been talking to these guys, mm-hmm. you guys are involved, and again, we've been talking with Leah Calabrese from Elisa Corporation, and you know, Alexander Drain, and all of our efforts with dealing with conditions like end-of-life stuff, asking those questions, you know, those are the things that, to me, because they're so poignant and human interest and specific, they only pluck the heartstrings of the people that have been in the same boat. You know, it's hard to relate to a special needs family if you haven't had a special needs child in your midst, or an Alzheimer's person in your midst, or someone suffering from a stroke in your midst, or someone dealing with AIDS, you know. All these things that we attach horrible stigmas to. Cancer used to have that stigma. Now you got Navigating Cancer as a website. I think it's great because it's dealing with the caregivers. It's dealing with all the people in between the person suffering and the person trying to help the person suffering. So I guess to kind of circle around it, we've been kind of kicking the can on this thing, is that who do you feel in all your travels, and you travel a lot, who gets it from a ground up standpoint, not from the top down, not from the clouds to the people with their funny little phones, the techie people, but from a much more personal grounded standpoint. I know Alice gets it. Who do you see as some names people can go if they're going to go get started on a Health 2.0? You know, kind of like, who's my list of five people I should know in Health 2.0 that are giving out, you know, more proactive and practical information and a lot less propaganda and pablum?
Huh. That is a question to put me on the spot. I think the Health 2.0 community has blossomed. It's big. We've got, you know, there's physicians involved, and I think those, you know, the physicians, I would, you know, to answer your question, I think the physicians who are part of the Health 2.0 community, who are vocal in that community, and they come, you know, they land on all sides of discussion, but I think they are very invested in what are the tools and resources that we can be giving to the patient, to the person, to help them be the best they can be and navigate this madness. So I would definitely encourage, seeking out some of those physicians. I personally am a fan of Ronnie Zeiger. He's actually with Google, but I think he has a very...
Oh, sorry, what was his name?
Ronnie Zeiger.
Ronnie Zeiger, okay.
Yeah, he's with Google, the Google Health Initiative, and you know, he's just got a good sense of how do you talk human to people. You know, he is a physician, but he's also obviously an innovator in industry and technology. But he's very grounded. He's a very good soul who I think has a good sense of. You know, how to bridge all of those worlds and make health not so, you know, pointing at you, but, you know, here's a world out there. Let's help you go figure it out. You know, I think Matthew Holt, who has been really instrumental in putting on the conferences, he's got fiery personality, a lot of opinions, but his heart is absolutely in the right place when it comes to what is the greater goal for Health 2.0. You mentioned our efforts with end-of-life conversations, making sure that people have had those conversations and understand what their wishes are, communicate those wishes, making sure they know what their loved ones' wishes are and are prepared to honor those. He's been with us from the very beginning in helping spread that word of Engage with Grace, which, you know.
Mm-hmm. And in case you guys aren't familiar, this is something that's Alex's project from a personal thing in her family. Engage with Grace is something that allows you to take a minute to look at, I think it's 5 questions on that one page. It's a one-page document that allows you to look at end-of-life issues with your family in a very engaging and I use it here ever since I came across you guys. I've had it here with my clients, and it's something, especially around the holidays, when you're looking at grandma and grandpa, and you're going, you know, has anyone really mentioned it? Because siblings don't tend to talk about it until it gets right down to the nitty gritty, and then it becomes, you know, panic time. And if you're in a situation where it comes on you suddenly, even worse. So it's something that, again, the system can't have that many contingencies to address your specific situation. So if you don't have that conversation, at least in theory, or give yourself some big balloons to work with, when it hits the fan, you're really going to be scrambling for help. And and the system doesn't really have, it's not equipped to handle it. I mean, where are you going to go? You're going to go to a social worker? Where are you going to go?
Yeah, exactly. You know? I'm so glad.
So we got Matt and we got Ron. Anybody else that they should know about?
There's so many. I mean,
of course, the lovely and talented Alexander Drain, but I'm just saying.
Alexander Drain.
Anybody else
that
you come across?
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, poke
around. We all bow towards Boston.
Hear the pain. You know, we're all over the country. You know, check out the blogs. There's a wide range of personalities and opinions that show up there. Some, to your point, you know, maybe have an agenda to push, but I think many of us are trying to figure out how do we just make this journey more human.
Yeah, and again, I think I applaud you guys from coming from the extreme other side of the rainbow there, being techies, that for the most part have like sucked the lifeblood out of almost all these things, because it's so much easier in a technical world to be impersonal and to be, you know, very one or zero about a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of room between one and zero where most of us are living our lives, and I just see it. Whether it's applying to the way we look at education, and you know, I don't understand why we can't put those things on a parallel track. Where if we know how a brain develops, and we know how to do education that fits multiple intelligences, and then if we know how to adapt to things epigenetically rather than dealing with them after they've already phenotypically expressed themselves, it just seems like we should be tracking things that way and have an entire generation raised, you know, pretty much. Raised in the awareness that things are developing, and then we have to basically make course corrections rather than have a preconceived notion of when everything's supposed to happen and normalize it, stick it on a bell curve and a standard deviations, get actuaries, and then give it over to the stockholders to decide our future. It's almost like we've created like a pachinko game for well-being, and we always lose. It's like there's a casino of healthcare, and the house always wins, you know? And we don't have Mike Tyson and his tiger.
On that note.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hang on.
We're taking back the house one at a time.
Well, hopefully, like I said, we can use the information you guys have been erstwhile in compiling, and rather than use it as a way to react to a system that's flawed, we can design a system that actually is fluid and that can have conversations going across these boundaries. Yeah. I've been trying for 5 years to get the youth coaches, the educators, and the parents to have a conversation so that they can use youth sports as a way of literally being physical education so that the kids learn how to use their body and express themselves.
Yeah.
You know, because you have all these kids that have language barriers running around playing soccer.
Yeah.
Well, they're not dealing with verbal boundaries on the field. They're dealing with nonverbal boundaries.
That's interesting.
So, you know, I'm just a little guy over here trying to push the coherence envelope a little bit, but that's my job, I guess.
Yeah. So, well, I appreciate you inviting me.
Yeah, no, it was interesting to, you know, bouncing these ideas over someone that's actually out there in the world talking to these bigwigs, and hopefully, like I said, you know, we'll see as we get to the lame duck session and we get beyond into next year, a lot of the things that have been discussed tonight will hit the wall, like, you know, because I just think a lot of them are unsustainable. Hopefully that reality will check in soon, and people will just, you know, become aware that they have more options than they might be being told by both sides of the political aisle and make choices for themselves. So,
yeah.
Wish you a happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving
to
everyone over there at Eliza. You guys,
thank you very much.
We'll be getting back to you soon on the Cocoa agenda. And are you traveling for Thanksgiving or are you staying local?
Going to upstate New York.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
How far upstate? Because I used to know people up in Albany. You going way up or just?
Oh, way up to Rochester. Yep, further west.
Oh, Snowbelt. Okay.
Yes.
All right, you and Highway 90. All right,
exactly.
Well, happy travels.
Exactly.
And,
thank you.
We'll talk to you soon, and best to everybody over there at the home office, and thanks for joining us tonight on Zomatone.
Wonderful. Thanks, Mark. Bye.
Take care. All right, there's a chirpy guest on the show. That guy scared her out of her mind. Elvis, what do you think?
What was he talking about?
That's right. All right, so to sum up, Wally Backman gets interviewed tomorrow. Everything else can wait. And we are all on pins and needles here at Zomatone as Sandy the Savior is weighing his options. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I want to spend a minute talking about this whole Michael Vick thing, though. If anyone watched Monday night, 4 touchdown passes, two touchdowns by running the ball. First 3 of our game in, I don't know, 5 years or something. And Michael Vick is an eco. Now, like Jesus and Elvis and myself, ecos are blameworthy, not trustworthy, blameworthy. So they have a persecution complex in their psyche, in their soma. And when you see a guy like this, again, we've been talking a lot about victims and villains and things like that all night, you know, performing at such a high level. You know, on an absolute, a relative, you know, the type of, you look at this on an absolute scale, you say, well, good for him. But then you look at how he got from dot to dot. He's a guy that did time. And I don't even know. I go back into the murkiness of his trial with the dogs. I don't even know if it was him personally electrocuting them and drowning them and all that other stuff, but it's a culture of people that do nothing but these dog fights. You know, I even learned a little about it watching my show, True Blood. And because of the fact, why would people resort to that? Why would people resort to gambling and selling drugs and a whole bunch of other socially risky things if there wasn't a scarcity of something out in the world? Now, you know, I got a client that's writing a movie about the gold market, and you see, you know, gold's getting close to $1,500 an ounce. It's insanity. Because money is a reflection of our ability to exchange energy, and I'm getting a little philosophical here at 10:23 until Wednesday night, summertime. Because money runs everything. And, you know, that answer from the Vanilla Sky movie, which I used to have on the switchboard here, I don't anymore. The answer to 99 questions out of 100 is money. What's going to happen with Derek Jeter? Money. What's going to happen with the Mets managerial search? Money. What's going to happen with health care? Money. Money, honey. It's just money. I need a woo-woo on that. Let's see.
Woo-woo! You know what I'm saying? Then you got the flows. They didn't trip off the flow masters.
That decoration, man. Just for decoration.
Yeah, and again, because of the fact that we haven't really uncoupled our ethos as a society from our economy, from our ability to produce value, real value, that isn't measured in dollars. It's measured in relationships. Because we haven't really done that well. Everything comes down to power and greed and control. And as I talked about Monday night, ain't no control in this universe. There's only the fear of losing it and the realization you never had it. And that's why it doesn't matter how big you are, how bad you are, you're Charlie Rangel, you're Michael Vick, you're Derek Jeter, you're Sarah Palin, or you're Wally Beckman. You do not control a damn thing. You can only be coordinated with things, fit into the bigger picture, self and surroundings. How about a little integration instead of all the interference? And that's what I'm really asking of Health 2.0, integrate yourself with the rest of the world. But no, they're isolating and making an industry and niching and branding and doing all those behaviors that corporatize, which is really to say disembody, take the corpus, take the body out, and institutionalize those factors we were addressing. And because people are out to dominate, they're out to win. Ultimately, all you get is a lot of defeated people, the rest of us, trivial many, that will then resort to things like that guy Michael Vick arrested. So I'm just saying the whole thing goes around. You can't have a villain and a victim and a hero without having exploitation across the boundaries. And those archetypes are so bound into our culture that like no Health 2.0 social network is going to help you. So what I'm asking you to do is, as you gather around, next week we're going to have our Thanksgiving show, where instead of giving thanks and being all pious and cerebral about it, it's an eco-Thanksgiving. We are going to have a wine and cheese party. So bring your complaints. Bring your cheese. What's your cheese, baby? What are you looking for in life? Who moved my cheese? Who moved my cheese? That's going to be next week's show. A little wine and cheese, and hopefully a little Wally, too. But that's all for next week. So if you have any questions about what I did this week, go over to somerspace.org. Go to my website and check it out. The domains are there. Learn the lingo, and enjoy it, celebrate it. Because once you know what a domain is, you will know what a domain isn't. Aha! And, other than that, questions come to me at nakedsomer@gmail.com. I want to thank my guests, Lee Calabrisek from Laser Corporation. And again, those names to Google, Matthew Holt and Ron Zieger, to check out. He's a Google guy, Google doctor, the Google doctor. Looking at humanizing some of these healthcare conversations. Hopefully you guys are not facing too many of those challenges this time of the year as we unwind from the clock change and steamroll to the full moon on Sunday. Check out the shooting stars tomorrow morning if you get up early. And other than that, this is Dr. Mark saying thank you once again for this time in your space. Be yourself and be well and travel light through the darkness. And now a little Stevie Ray to lead us into the Eagles Giants this Sunday and the Wally Beckman interview tomorrow. We'll be back next Wednesday at 9 with more to complain and whine and dine me with on Thermodyne. Right. Here he is.
Can't catch no breath. Can't catch no breath. Can't catch no breath. Can't catch no breath. Can't catch no breath.
Double shot here of Stevie Ray. So let's say we can find a little crossfire here. And I'm needing to hear that song before I get off the air. Stevie. Little Stevie Ray Vaughan. There it is. Cause Fire. I love this song. And then we'll see you next week.
Bring it, Eagle. Bringing it to down there in Orlando. Get your wally on.